Thank you for tuning into the podcast, The 10 Essential Elements of Cross-Age Teaching, brought to you by the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. My name is Carrie Rabideau, and I'm a Youth Development Extension Educator. Joining me today is my colleague, Amber Shanahan, who is also an Extension Educator. Welcome, Amber.
Thank you, Carrie, for having me.
And thank you so much for joining us in this conversation on cross-age teaching. Let's start with you telling us a little bit about yourself and how you became interested in this particular topic.
Perfect. Thanks, Carrie. I have been working in the field of youth development for over 10 years, but I initially was interested in cross-age teaching and peer mentoring types of programs way back when I was a high school student myself, and I participated in a program called PALS, which was Peer Assistant Listeners. And it was that program that trained me as a teen leader to support and guide and mentor younger youth in my school district. And that experience in and of itself gave me the excitement around going into youth development and being able to provide guidance and leadership to other youth and potential youth development workers that would be working with mentoring and supporting and in just within the field of youth development. And so I came across this program in the state of Minnesota called the Youth Teaching Youth Program that had very similar outcomes and expectations around why cross-age teaching is important, and was drawn to it and was excited when I had the opportunity to work within that program in one of the counties in Minnesota and now lead it for the state. So that's why I find some of this research really exciting, and it's been a part of who I am in my career since way before my career ever began.
Yeah, well, I can hear that excitement as you talk about the program, and I love that connection so much. As youth workers, we went into working with young people because of experiences we had had as a young person ourselves. So I really appreciate that you're tying in your own experiences with your passions and with the work that you went into and where you're headed now. You wrote a blog post about this in our Youth Development Insight, and for listeners, this can be found on our website. I'll give that website later, and you can engage in our blog, the Youth Development Insight. But in your post, you describe the 10 essential elements of working with cross-age teaching programs. As we start this conversation about cross-age teaching, or other people may call it youth teaching youth, tell us what this means for a young person, because too often youth are used as in that role of an assistant or a helper. How is the program you're working with different from that?
Great question. So a cross-age teaching program is more than just mentoring or peer support. This is a program where we are essentially requesting and providing opportunities for teens to be leaders and teachers, really taking the reins in a classroom, within an organization, to lead a curriculum, to lead a lesson on their own. And so the adult has provided really strong support and training ahead of time and provided the materials and all of the things that a teen might need to lead a really strong content-based curriculum or lesson. But the teen is on their own in terms of managing a classroom, in terms of understanding the ages and stages of the youth that they are working with, and going through the entire process of leading said lesson. And so, in terms of a mentor program, or oftentimes that's more one-to-one with a mentor and a youth, or any other peer support program, this is really, one to two or more youth that are at the front of a classroom or engaged, directly with a group of young people and really taking the reins and being in control. And so it adds even more of a professional opportunity to the experience. And in terms of the 10 essential elements, this is research that's based on from colleagues, extension colleagues out in California who have done a significant amount of research around cross-age teaching and have provided some really basic steps and expectations around what makes a cross-age teaching program successful. And so in the state of Minnesota, we have developed a program that we call the Youth Teaching Youth Program, which mirrors all of these essential elements, and we ensure that whenever we offer a cross-age teaching program, specifically the Youth Teaching Youth Program, that these elements are embedded into everything that we do. We want to make sure that we're setting the teams up for success. We want to make sure that the younger youth are getting something of quality out of the experience and that there's really strong leadership involved. And so without these essential elements, we've learned that the program won't be as successful. So we are, you know, it's tried and true research, and we are really focused on it.
Well, I think it's always helpful to have those, you know, these key aspects of, if you know that if you do these things, your young people have a high quality experience.
Correct.
So I think, you know, let's just jump right into them and start with number one of the essential elements of cross-age teaching. You cite number one as dedicated adults who support the teens. Mm-hmm. You referred to this a little bit in the intro that you talked about, but expand a little bit more on the role of these dedicated adults and how they support this program.
So, like many 4-H programs, for those listeners that are not aware, there is an expectation that there's a strong youth and adult partnership. And so whether that's a volunteer or a staff member or somebody who is working in partnership or in tandem with an organization, we really want to be able to set young people up with quality relationships that will enhance their experience. And we know that in terms of a cross-age teaching program, that we can't just throw a teen into a program without equipping them with the training that they need, with the supplies that they need, with the support that they need, somebody who can provide them with the comfort around the logistics that are involved with this program, like how are they going to get someplace, or how are they going to, how are they going to manage a situation that might be difficult. And so our program in the state of Minnesota is run, we have really strong support from program coordinators in the counties that have this program specifically. We also have support from our partner organizations. So our program works with a number of school districts in a 4-county area, and now it's a 5-county area. And so we have both 4-H program coordinators in the county program and teachers or coaches or other administration at a school level who are on the ground supporting the program. And together, those two adults provide all of those comforts and support that a teen would need to feel good about getting in front of a bunch of kids, because that can be kind of scary. That support also needs to be strong support. It needs to be consistent support. And that adult leads the entire program through the experiential learning process. So providing opportunities for teens to experience, leading reflection activities, and trying to help them understand how that experience and their reflection can apply to other aspects of their life. And so, though the teens really do take strong, strong leadership in a cross-age teaching program, it's very important that an adult is supporting them throughout the entire process.
And it sounds like you have a team of adults supporting them through this process.
We do, yes.
Yeah. All right, well, let's turn to the teens themselves. Number two in your essential elements list is active teen recruitment. Now, this can be a challenge in any program. Just because you build it doesn't mean they'll come, right?
Correct.
So how? What are your tips for successfully encouraging and involving teens in this program?
So as I briefly mentioned throughout one of the other questions that you asked, we work oftentimes in partnership with school districts. And in order for our program to work, we need to have really strong relationships with our schools. We have to have really strong relationships with staff members at those schools. And then we have to be able to identify teens that would be even remotely interested in taking part in a program like this. And so again, with a cross-age teaching program, ours specifically, the Youth Teaching Youth Program, we are putting teens in front of a classroom to lead a curriculum. So we're looking for teens who are interested in amping up their public speaking skills or interested in the field of teaching. So perhaps they're thinking about being a teacher or they're wanting to go into education, and this would be a great opportunity for them to gain some experience. We could also be looking for some teens who are really invested in the specific curriculum that they're teaching. So say it's around, healthy living or anti-drinking or internet safety. So you might appeal to a teen who has had to deal with some of those issues themselves when they were younger or even currently. And so we oftentimes connect with other organizational clubs within the school like SAD or an equivalent to that, where teens are passionate and invested in the specific curriculum and want to spread that information further for their younger peers. We also oftentimes, because there's a community service aspect involved in this, we will look to teens who are looking for volunteer hours. So it could be National Honor Society members or other, opportunities within a school district where teens are looking to enhance and grow their volunteer numbers. And so there's a wide variety of places where we recruit. In fact, we've even worked with an entire football team at one of our high schools where the coach was really interested in having the teens gain some really strong experience working with younger kids. And so there's a lot of different ways that you can go. Every district is different. And if you're not working in partnership with another organization, you are going to be able to look, beyond within your community for kids who are looking to gain these skills and looking to expand on experiences working with younger kids. But it is really about being active, having something appealing that the youth are going to be getting out of it, and being able to share some of the benefits of the program to those kids so that they understand, if I'm involved in this, here are the things that I could get out of it. They may even realize that if they're thinking about being teachers, that maybe they don't want to be a teacher anymore. They spend enough time in a classroom and recognize that it's not for them, and that can be a beneficial experience as well.
So you mentioned meeting them where they're at and finding out what their interests are and recruiting from that aspect. And you did bring up curriculum a couple times, for example, healthy living or internet safety. Your third point of this list, you cite strong curriculum. Mm-hmm. And do you develop your own, or do you have suggestions for quality resources? How do we find good curriculum for this program?
So in our 4-H Youth Teaching Youth Program from the University of Minnesota, we have a team of program coordinators who work specifically with this program, who develop the curriculum. And the curriculum is developed has been developed based on needs within the community. So this program, to give a little history, began over 30 years ago in one of the counties that we work with, and it was developed because there was a significant issue around teenage drinking and the effects that had on a school district. And so the need there was for, and then the request from the school district was, hey, 4-H, is there anything that you can do to help us address this issue in a unique way? And that's where we stepped in, 30 plus years ago, to write a curriculum that was really specific to that issue, but was created in a way so that teens could lead it for younger kids. And so whenever we write a curriculum, it's research-based, and we're taking, facts that we know we can share with younger kids, but we're also developing it in a way so that it's easy for teens to deliver. So there's a script involved. Is a specific key that we use in terms of what is bolded, you're going to say out loud, and what is in italics, it's a teaching tip. And if it's underlined, it's a question. And so when we go through our training, we try and help teens understand that key so that, their very first time in front of a classroom, they could essentially look at the key or look at the script the entire time, and have that, security that they can still deliver the content, even if they're afraid of speaking in front of a classroom. We've evolved a lot since that very first curriculum around alcohol and tobacco decision making is what that curriculum is really around. We have curriculum now that discusses internet safety. We have one around character building for really young kids. And we have a 9-part series that's called It's Your Choice that encompasses a lot of healthy living topics around relationship building and stress, and there's elements of alcohol and tobacco use in there as well. But they are a lot of pieces that they're topics that we know that younger kids need to start hearing about now, and that teens feel like they have some experience in, whether they've been involved in any of those things or not. They at least have the opportunity to talk about why they aren't involved in them, or if they've had a reason that they've had to say no, and they can share that with their younger peers. And so that's what has been making this program, the curriculum aspect of this program, so strong for us, is that we know that teens are excited to talk about these topics because they feel like they have some experience with them.
As you were talking through the curriculum, you alluded to the training that you do with the young people. So as you're developing the curriculum, you're thinking about how you're going to train the young people. Number four on your list is initial training, that is so important. Tell us more of those components for that training for young people.
So we know that the training is one of the most important parts of this entire experience. In order for somebody to feel like a strong cross-age teacher and to be able to effectively lead for our 4-H Youth Teaching Youth program, there is an expectation that we discuss what it's like to be a teacher and what they should be expecting when they're in front of a classroom and what their responsibilities will be as a teacher. And so we talk, a lot of the teens that we recruit for this program are not historically involved in the 4-H program. So we talk a little bit about what it means to be working with 4-H and how they're affiliated with our university. So there's some background pieces there that are important for them to understand. We also talk a lot about classroom management. So you have some kids that are acting up. How can you effectively manage that, and how can you keep kids on task? How do you pick kids to participate in some of the activities or break them up into groups? And so there's some pieces around just those management aspects that are really important to provide for them before we put them in front of a group. We're also wanting to talk to them about ages and stages. So I did talk about the varied curriculums that we have. They go on a scale from, second grade until sixth grade. So clearly there's a very different dynamic between how you would teach a second grader and how you would teach a sixth grader. So we make sure to prepare all of the teachers that we train to effectively teach any age group, because they might not know which group they'll teach throughout an entire year. So there's also an expectation that they are a role model. And so we know that they're coming into a classroom teaching about curriculum that can be kind of heavy topics, and we want to make sure that they understand that in this role they are using appropriate behavior, they're not engaging in illegal behavior, that they are appropriately acting appropriate, I guess, when they're in front of a classroom, and that they know like what is acceptable and what isn't. So it's a
actions really, speak louder than words, right?
Yes, absolutely. So and the training can be, we have, it's an important aspect of this, but we can do training in like a 3-hour period or an 8-hour period, but it's ensuring that we are defining those expectations and those responsibilities, and then also providing a layout of what it's going to be like to be in front of a classroom. So it can be kind of scary. And so we want to make sure that we are, really providing as much information as we can about what that experience will look like, what it's like when you show up at a school, what it's like to get in front of a classroom, what the activities entail, so that they feel like they have some control and understanding about what they're going to be doing over that time period.
And so you've given them that initial training, and thank you for going through the components and the important aspects of that. In number five, you mentioned the ongoing training and support. So I imagine that's after they have taught a time or two. What are the key pieces of additional training that you find young people need?
So this is really an important piece, especially for any 4-H program, in terms of reflection. And so wanting to ensure that when a group of teens have gone through the process of teaching in a classroom, that we're able to pull them back and say, okay, what went well? What didn't go well? And what are some things that you would like to work on moving forward? So a lot of our curriculums, we know that we want to have repeat contact with our young people, the younger students. And so most of our curriculums do span at least 3 sessions. And so the teens have at least 3 opportunities to continue practicing and getting better over that, you know, three session time period. And so they have the opportunity to discuss what they would like to do moving forward and what types of changes and tweaks they can make to improve upon. And then we're also able to offer them some ongoing training. So if it's that they're feeling like they weren't prepared because there was, you know, some disruptive youth that were making things difficult, we can provide them with the skills or some insight that they might, that might be useful to help improve that process for them. So, but the reflection piece is super important because it helps us go through that experiential learning theory, like any 4-H program, and really connect the dots between the experience that they're having and the ways that they can apply it moving forward.
And I love that you have that in here intentionally, because too often we set up this valuable experience for young people. They go through it, and then that reflection piece gets left off at the end, and that's where the real learning begins, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, I think for your 8th component, you have talked about some of these, but your 8th component, it's important to note that attention to details. Tell us a little more about that, you know, your experiences with needing that attention to details.
Well, there's a lot of ways that you could develop a cross-age teaching program. So the way that I am typically speaking about it in this podcast is around partnerships with a 4-H program and with a school district. And so, of course, there's ways to offer cross-age teaching just within a 4-H program or just within an organization where there aren't so many moving parts. But for our program, the Youth Teaching Youth program, when we're working in partnership with a school district, there are a tremendous amount of moving parts. We have to think about how we're transporting teens from one school to the next, because this is usually happening during a school day. We need to think about the materials that need to be involved and what that could mean for a young person who's leading a program if they don't have everything that they need and they, you know, feel disorganized because of it. So there's a lot of pieces that are required in terms of coordination from a staff perspective or from an adult leader perspective. And so really being involved in all of the details, you know, every single detail to even what seems like it might not be that big of a deal, is going to be hit or miss in terms of the experience that we're offering for these teens. And so we want to make sure that when they are participating in this program, that they understand, you know, they feel safe. They feel like they understand what's happening and what the schedule is. They understand, you know, when they need to be ready to go and when they need to be wrapping things up. And that makes them feel safe. It makes them feel supported. They have an opportunity to be more engaged because they're not thinking about all of the other things that are worrisome to them. They can focus just on the experience in the classroom. And so we also, as an organization, we follow the Youth Program Quality Assessment Tool, and we are, you know, intentional about ensuring that we're thinking about that safety piece and the welcoming piece as often as we can to make sure that youth are focused on the task at hand, which is cross-age teaching, and not having to worry about all of the other details.
Recognition and reward are the 7th on your list. And I think, like reflection, that's an area that can be overlooked. And not because it's not important, not because it's not valuable, but because it's that extra step that we often lose time for. What are your suggestions, and how do you recognize and reward the young people who participate in this program?
So, you know, the 4-H Youth Teaching Youth Program is done for a variety of reasons. You know, we know that we can offer in tandem with a school district, and it helps us reach a lot more youth with 4-H programming. And one program coordinator or one adult leader can't just reach that same amount of youth on their own. So it is imperative that we have teens that are willing to volunteer their time and participate in this program, so that we can expand our reach that much more. So this program, of course, you know, it has dual benefits in terms of reaching the younger youth and reaching the older youth. And we certainly need to be able to recognize and reward those teens who have stepped up to the plate to lead a classroom and to take time away from their own schooling, because they're probably, you know, doing this within their school day and will have to then go back and do their homework and try and catch up. I mean, it's a big responsibility and it's a big request. And so, you know, consistently reminding these teens about, you know, how much we appreciate their involvement, being able to provide them with any opportunities in terms of, you know, more leadership experiences or letters of recommendation or, you know, things like that, that we know are important aspects of why kids stay involved. And of course, food and candy is always helpful as well.
Number 8 on your list is team building. Now, I assume this is maybe part of that initial training, but talk a little bit more about that. Who are you building team with and why is that important?
So many times, and what's actually recommended in terms of the research is we use more than one teen in front of a classroom. So we have 2 to 3 or more teens that are leading one lesson. And a lot of times these teens don't know each other before they get involved in this program. And we want to make sure that if they're, you know, just like any group of people who are working together, that when they're in front of a classroom, they are meshing appropriately and feeding off of each other and being able to work with each other. And so that does require team building. So it requires, especially during the training, to do strong introductions to help them understand what their role will be within their team and to really identify and define what the experience will look like for each member of that team. That creates a really positive peer support network. It provides real world experience. And when you go through some of the reflection pieces, it's kind of cool because you can see teens reflecting both on their own experience, but then also being able to give kudos to the person that they were teaching with, which is a nice, nice addition to getting more teens involved.
So number 9 on your list is setting teens up for success. And I feel like our entire conversation of you sharing about this program has given a lot of examples of how you do exactly that. You set those teens up for a successful experience. Do you have anything else to add to that? Any other strategies that you use that you haven't mentioned already that really add to that?
Yeah, I think I have touched on a lot of the pieces around setting teams up for success. But again, ensuring that the initial training is super high quality and that we're offering an opportunity for ongoing reflection, which can be difficult because these programs tend to run really fast. And, you know, it's easy to overlook some of those reflection pieces, but in really ensuring and being proactive about embedding that into every session is super important. And again, as I mentioned, the way that we develop the curriculum is an opportunity for us to ensure that teens can walk into a classroom, read from a script if they feel like they need to, without having to worry about memorizing or missing key points, which gets them more engaged in the actual leadership opportunity than having to worry so much about the content. So
builds that confidence.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then finally, number 10, that feedback and evaluation. Also important, but I think like we talked about with the recognition reward, like we talked about with the reflection pieces, again, another element that's easy to forget, or we just simply don't do that, or we're not sure how to do that evaluation. How do we get that feedback? What's your secret? How do you get feedback from the young people who work in this program?
So again, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, the reflection piece and making sure that we're getting information from them about what's going well and what's not going well.
So you use reflection as the evaluation.
We do. But then, you know, we're also, in terms of ways that we continue to improve this program or to tweak it, we use these teams to help us modify curriculum. So, and actually, we're talking about 10 essential elements here. But the authors of some of this research out of California is Lee Murdoch and Patterson. They have also developed another, set of research where they've broken this down even more into 12 elements. And one of the elements that they talk about is teen voice and involvement. And that's something that from a youth teaching youth perspective, we're trying to involve even more in terms of curriculum development, knowing that the people who are teaching this are the teens and can provide even more information about how things worked and how they didn't work and what we need to do as content developers to make it the most appropriate experience or the most effective experience for the teens in the classroom. And so having focus groups with some of these teens, asking them to fill out surveys towards the end, and really as we're going through curriculum development or revision, going to some of the teens who have been really involved in the program over the year to say, okay, this activity seems to have been, was confusing for the younger kids or seemed to be kind of, a jumble when you were doing it in front of the classroom. So what would be some suggestions that we can use to make this even better? And so that's a great way for us to not only, receive feedback and evaluate the program, but to also incorporate more teen voice and incorporate their involvement in developing, further content or making further revisions.
So, Amber, thank you for sharing your experiences with this program today and talking to us about those 10 essential elements, plus one, making sure youth voice is in there as well. Really valuable conversation, and I think anyone listening to this podcast would be able to take pieces of this. And of course, they can contact you if they would like more information about this, right?
Absolutely.
And if any of you would like to learn more about working with youth, you can find us on that website I promised you earlier, www.extension.umn.edu/youth. This is where you're going to find other research, training, and events. We do both online and in-person trainings. Also, check out our information on our Minnesota 4-H program. You can join the latest conversations in the Youth Development Insight blog that Amber had written about this particular topic on, and there are lots of other topics that you can read and interact with. Ask the author questions and get some information directly from them. So go ahead and engage in that as well. That will wrap up this podcast. So I am Carrie Rabideau with Amber Shanahan from the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Please tune in again soon.
Thank you, Carrie.